Here at the 2012 World Food Prize, we just heard a presentation on the 2012 Global Hunger Index by the International Food Policy Research Institute, or IFPRI. With me is one of the authors of the actual index itself. And Claudia, could you introduce yourself for me, please?
Yeah. Thank you very much. Claudia Ringler, Deputy Division Director of the Environment and Production Technology at IFPRI. And it's exactly true. So I wrote the essay on how land, water, and energy stresses are linked with hunger and food insecurity. And as we found, those countries that face high levels of hunger are also the same countries that face scarcity of natural resources, where people have limited access to clean water and sanitation, very low levels of access to modern forms of energy, and also insecure land rights.
Well, overall, now, just explain to me, what is the Hunger Index? What do you present here?
Yeah, the Hunger Index is very simple, which is why I like it as well. So the Hunger Index is just really a measure of the state of world hunger. It includes three dimensions of hunger, so the proportion of the population that is undernourished, child underweight, so those are children under the age of 5 whose weight is low compared to their age, and also child mortality. All these three dimensions contribute to hunger.
So now you put all those things together for all the different countries, and you come up with, say, a serious hunger index, correct?
Right. So basically, across the 120 countries that we have studied, we find that hunger levels, while they have declined between 1990 and today, levels remain serious.
Mm-hmm. Now, I suppose that means that there are some countries in some parts of the world where they are more than serious.
Exactly. So, the countries with what we call extremely alarming levels include Haiti. Unsurprisingly, they really have never recovered from the earthquake. And we also have Eritrea, where political strife, unrest, and extremely poor policy combined to extremely high levels of hunger. And also Burundi, where the situation is somewhat similar.
Where are you seeing the most improvement?
Well, we have seen a lot of improvement in a lot of countries, actually. Countries like Vietnam, Turkey, quite a few countries in sub-Saharan Africa as well as Ghana, that has made a real step forward towards agriculture investment. Those are countries that have made significant improvements and have been able to reduce hunger levels.
Well, when you look at the water issue, well, it's been brought up several times, and that was part of your area here. How does that play into the whole thing?
Mm-hmm. So, the water dimension is large because all economic sectors depend on water, and water use is driven by these economic sectors. So what we have obviously found, and makes a lot of sense, is access to clean and safe drinking water and to sanitation remains very low in the countries where hunger is high. Lack of clean water is a major contributor to malnutrition, to hunger. But there's also the issue of water rights and access to irrigation. And those rights remain contested. At the same time, the countries that have irrigation, that have abundant resources, tend to use them very unsustainably. So they don't pay the actual value of water. So we have really problems on both sides.
What are you seeing as far as increasing the amount of protein in the diets in different places around the world?
Yeah, we do need a lot more proteins in most developing country diets, so the levels of meat, milk consumptions remain extremely low, and that will use a lot more water and other natural resources. At the same time, we see over-consumption, overuse of proteins and meat, for example, in much of the OECD countries. So again, we have this imbalance. We do not want to tell developing countries to not produce more livestock and to not consume more meat. But what we want to say is the way that developed countries use proteins and meat production is unsustainable.
So you're looking at more of ways to make that more sustainable, then. That would be ideal.
Yes. So there are actually a lot of technologies, even on the livestock production side, improved feeding practices, improved grazing practices that reduce the water, energy, and land footprint of livestock production. A lot more can be done there. And actually, the developed countries have moved in the direction of making livestock production more sustainable, even so it doesn't necessarily seem that way because we have these feedlot systems. But in terms of output per liter of milk produced, for example, they're a lot more efficient than what's done currently in much of Africa, Latin America, and Asia.
Well, now, overall, as far as this report is concerned, this is, what, the seventh one,
yes.
I think you said you've done. How is this used? What do you want people to do with this when they get this hunger index?
So, I mean, what we have found whenever we release the index, so there's, you know, the countries that have lower, that show up with lower levels of hunger, you know, they come back and they want to know why, and they obviously display the information. The countries that fear badly, they also come back to us and sometimes they try to refute the data. And what's important is we want to stimulate discussions in the countries. We want to stimulate discussions with policymakers. Sometimes we have sessions, the report is released in many countries concomitantly, particularly also in India, where, you know, hunger levels remain very high. I've mentioned 40% of the children are underweight. And so that actually starts discussions with the government. The index has certainly led to increased investment in nutrition and food security programs in India. So this is the kind of results that we want to see.
Well, that India, it's interesting that is still the case when we're seeing increasing per capita income there. We're seeing increasing use of protein there. Is it becoming more, I mean, is this really opening their eyes then to ways that they can alleviate hunger in that country?
I think so, yes. I mean, definitely the government feels, you know, that their national undernutrition rates are a shame for the country. So I think they have agreed to that. How much difference has it made in the daily politics that the Indian government faces as any other government? You know, I'd say there have been some improvements, but obviously, you know, these are not short-term investments. You cannot, children and adult people that are undernourished, badly fed today, you cannot turn it around. It takes at least a generation. So I think the government has taken the right steps in the direction towards enhanced nutrition programs and so forth. More can be done. The key really is that the political will remains, that we don't see a new government coming in and just throwing overboard what the current government is doing. So this report, again, serves as a reminder, you know, levels remain still high, hunger levels remain high. You have to keep doing those programs. You know, don't just drop them after a few years.
All right. Very good. Claudia, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I'd like to add that, you know, while the picture is somewhat grim in the report, I mean, the importance really is to focus on the solutions and what we can do to reduce hunger and malnutrition levels. And there's a lot we can do. And that's what I hope the report will be useful for and will be used for.
And you can find this report on IFPRI?
On IFPRI's website, I'm certainly sure Concern's website, and Welt Hungerhilfe, who also contributed to the report. You'll find them on all these websites. You can just Google Global Hunger Index. It'll come up.
All right. Thank you. And I did that, and it does. All right. Thank you very much. Here at the World Food Prize, I'm Cindy Zimmerman.